Welcome to the Yak Sports Podcast with Joe Deck and Leland McRae.
Welcome to another episode of the Yak Sports Podcast, and we're just going to jump into the biggest story that's been happening in local sports, which is the Buffalo Gap Girls and another great run to the state playoffs. So, Joe, you ready to bring on Coach Morgan here?
Yeah, we got Coach Morgan. I've seen Coach Morgan bouncing around old Rob Ron's place, so we're glad to have Coach Morgan with us. And, Coach, it was an exciting run. I know it didn't end the way you wanted, but this is a core that, you know, accomplished a lot in their time at Buffalo Gap.
Yeah, it was an exciting run. Like, we were hoping and really working towards being able to play this week in the championship game. But I had a core of three seniors, and then there was one junior, Hannah Kaufman, that have played on these last three teams that made it 2 years ago to the state championship and the last 2 years to the state semifinals. So, yeah, it was an exciting core with some people that have come on board for a year or two part of that. But it was a good group.
You know, looking at this game, it was an exciting game. I mean, as a team you had played a week before, and obviously they came in more prepared to take you on, and they made it an ugly game, I guess, is from my point of view. It was a rough game. You know, talk about some of your reactions to how, you know, Brunswick attacked you better and maybe even some of the things you guys didn't do quite as well.
Well, I thought the one thing, the big adjustment they made, the point guard, can't remember her name, but was number three. She didn't even score the week before when we played them. And I don't know if she really even looked to shoot that much, but she was much more aggressive this game. And I know he had said in the newspaper that they wanted to be more aggressive from the perimeter and shooting the ball. And I thought they were. But even with that being said, I thought we did a lot of the things we wanted to. We held the big girl on the inside to only 20 points instead of 29, and she had scored 42 on Tuesday night against Essex. So I thought we did a good job there. But we created turnovers. I think the stat was we had 17 turnovers we created, but we only had 5 points off those turnovers. So I thought that was big. And we needed to hit a few more free throws than what we did. But, I mean, the girls played hard. And I'm not using this as an excuse, but there were two of them that the night before going into the game were basically up all night throwing up and sick. Oh. And for them to be able to play, and their starters, it was Bailey Talley and Hannah Kaufman. Both of them were sick. In fact, one of them is still out of school today. So we avoided the sickness all year, and it kind of hit us right here at this point, which is not the time to hit.
Well, I want to talk to you about, you know, what this core has meant to you, and looking at, you know, the kind of regular season your team was able to put together this year. I'll ask you, Leland and I have this conversation about a lot of sports, it feels like, in the Shenandoah District when they get into the playoffs. And is the Shenandoah District iron sharpening iron, or is it, you know, the Shenandoah District not really preparing some of our teams for some of the better teams they might see? And it kind of depends on regions and stuff. But I know for your Buffalo Gap team, it seemed like this year it was fairly easy in the Shenandoah District. You guys kind of cruised through it, no problems. And then you get into this kind of tournament and you play a Brunswick team that you knew was going to be a challenge, even though you had a sizable victory the previous time.
Yeah, I mean, the Shenandoah District year in and year out seems to be a pretty tough district. And for us being the smallest school, we know that if we can get through the district. Now, I'll be honest, I did not expect to go through undefeated this year. I thought we would have a chance to compete every night. But usually for us, the district, when you throw in the 3A schools and then the 2A schools, it's for us, knowing going to the regionals, what I've been able to tell the girls is, you know what, we've seen good competition. And then when we play in the Strasburg tournament, we're the smallest school there. And then we played Allegheny, who made the Region 3C tournament. I think our schedule sets us up for into the region and to play well. And every district goes through phases where you'll get, the top is really good, and then maybe the next year it's not as much and all of that. But I thought we, with our core, I thought we had a chance to compete. And I knew that if we can compete in the Shenandoah, what that usually does for us is tell us in the region, we've got a chance to compete against everybody.
What I was really impressed with your team this year is that we came into the season talking about what can Gap do this year? You know, what kind of expectations are legitimate to put on these kids? And you guys lived up to it. That's what I thought was so impressive. So often, you know, we put that out there, and unless you're talking about Riverheads football, you don't consistently see expectations met or surpassed. And you guys, undefeated regular season, I think that's a surpass, like you're saying. And then getting back to those state playoffs, that's what we were saying. Back to the state playoffs is kind of the aim, and there you guys were. So I really thought you guys did a great job handling expectations. How was it coaching with high expectations there?
Well,
from the outside, you might always have personal high expectations, but feeling it from the outside.
Well, and that's something I think these girls felt from a lot of different ways, was those expectations. But I reckon the thing that kind of held it together was they had those expectations for themselves.
Yeah.
And we just had, and I remember we were playing up at the Strasburg tournament, and something happened in there in one of those games. I don't remember what it was. But I had to stress to him, I said, listen, as long as we keep the we before the me, we're going to be fine. And one thing that I thought through the course of this year, through the highs and the lows, I mean, when you're talking about a season being 4 months long and you've got Christmas break and there's Thanksgiving break and then there's the new year and all of that, that's a long time. And I thought they handled the stuff on the court, the stuff in the locker room, the expectations from outside. I thought they did that really well. And that's something we talked about on a regular basis. Listen, none of this other stuff matters except what we do in the locker room and out on the floor together. And I thought the experience came through with that. And I thought that they're focused. I thought they were real focused on getting back and being part of that state tournament again.
Well, Coach, I know you've talked about, you know, Hannah Kaufman and Kaylee Hemp a few times already. Those are the players that are coming back. You know, looking ahead to next year, I know it's early here since this year just ended, but looking ahead to next year, this isn't a Buffalo Gap team that's just totally going to fall off the face of the earth.
No, that's the goal. We try to build with the young kids. I know that we as coaches at Buffalo Gap, we run the little league at Buffalo Gap. So from the time they enter as kindergartners up through eighth grade, we get to see them play. We're interacting with the parents and with Hannah and Kaylee. And then so, and with Kara Ritchie, who came off and had 12 points at Brunswick, hitting 4 3-pointers, and Rachel Carter and some of the other young ones that are coming. Our goal is to get through the Shenandoah District again, to get better. And the one thing that we always stress, because of the point system that we have in the Region 1B, that when we play 3As and we play 3As and 2A schools, even if we don't win, if we're getting better in every game, then we're going to be all right come the region. And that's not going to change with next year's group. I mean, you talk about Hannah Kaufman. She's played in the state semifinals or the championship game 3 years in a row. She's not going to want to take a step back. I expect her to be working toward it. And for Kara Ritchie, her ninth grade year, we pulled her up from the JVs for that state championship game run or state semifinal run. She was part of that. So it's one of these things that they have that expectation. They've tasted that. They want to be a part of that. So, yeah, I'm excited about next year's group. I mean, I just finished packing everything up today at 4:30. I left school at 4:30, had everything packed up so baseball can have the locker room. But with that in mind, I'm already thinking, okay, when am I going to have the meetings with the individual girls? So this is what I need you to do. This is where you need to improve. Where are we going to team camp? When are we going to do all of that stuff? So it's already in the back of your mind, what are the steps that we need to do to get back there for next year?
Well, that sounds like kind of good news, how you're looking ahead. Because I know you coached at Gap 10 years and you had state success and then you stepped away. Now you're back and you're having state success. You've had a lot. I mean, you had a good run early there and more recently too. You're looking into the future pretty good. Is that a fair statement to say at this point?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm ready to go. And it's just the one thing I have learned the longer I do this, there are things that are important and things that are not. Right now, it's important for me to take a couple of months off, let the girls go do their spring sports. And then about the time the spring sports are winding down, we'll get back into it. Then we'll go to team camp. About the end of June, we'll stop. July is a crazy month with the 4th of July, dead periods, football and volleyball start. We don't do anything in July. And then we'll hit back once school starts. So I reckon I try to pace myself a little bit more. But, no, I'm excited about the group that's coming back. I'm excited about the groups in behind that. And it's just, right now it's moving forward.
Great. Well, good. That's a happy news for everybody. Like, I didn't say there was any rumors of that. There was no Andy Reid Super Bowl rumors here or anything. But, I know we see other coaches, it takes such a toll on you. I know it does. But with the program you've built out there and all the success you're having, it does have to be a little bit smoother than some of what these other coaches are experiencing.
Well, and I reckon the thing, and I've learned, and I'll have to say it's thanks to my wife in some ways. I've really tried to, put everything into coaching, but realize that there's so many other parts of my life. There's the family life. I mean, I pastor a church. I've got that life, and this is part of it. And I think as long as I keep that perspective that this isn't just who I am, there's lots of other things. That I stay refreshed. I allow myself to re-energize and I can look at moving forward and I'm excited about it. I'm excited about next year's group. I saw growth in all of them and I'm looking forward to seeing that with the group that'll be the seniors next year and the juniors. I'm already calling them seniors and juniors and sophomores. They're not juniors and sophomores and freshmen anymore.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, Coach Morgan. I heard from good authority today that you love to watch your Hogan's Heroes and your MASH here, and so we don't want to hold you from that too much more, but we always ask folks, and maybe that's your answer, what would you recommend to our audience that you've been watching or maybe reading or something outside of sports?
Well, right now, I reckon – my wife says I kind of binge on stuff, but I use it with the Amazon Fire Stick. I don't watch a lot of regular TV, but right now it's Hogan's Heroes. I like Father Brown off of BritBox. I like that. And my wife and I usually each night, a lot of times we'll watch an episode of or two of Frasier, the old Frasier.
Oh, yeah.
It's those old things that I said, hey, and still I know it's 7 o'clock every weeknight when MeTV is MASH for an hour. Yep. So I can, with coaching and the way we have to do those practices now, I miss that most time during basketball, but I think I may start getting back into watching those MASH reruns.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've got my inside source on Buffalo Gap stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah, don't hold him up from his shows. He loves his shows.
No, with the Fire Stick, I can watch it anytime.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk to us. And congrats on another great season.
Well, thank you all for having me. I appreciate it. And I'm excited about the girls and what they did.
Thanks again to Coach Morgan for taking the time to talk to us. And Leland, that kind of wraps up our winter sports coverage because we talked about it last week. All the other teams had been eliminated already. So this was the last.
They were
team
the last
we
women standing. But
yeah. And we just talked about it with Coach Morgan, but coming up a little shorter than they had hoped, but still a solid season.
Yeah. I mean, that's, it's that life lesson too. And I honestly talking with my kids, I use that as a life lesson because I was talking them up. I was like, hey, watch these girls. They're kids just like you or will be. This is Buffalo Gap. It's just, we play in that gym for the All-Star tournament and you'll grow up playing in that gym. Like they're doing it. They're like going towards that ultimate goal. And this year, it looked like they had a really good shot for it. And so, using that life lesson of, a little disappointment there isn't the worst thing. The greatest thing though about Coach Morgan and this program that he has built and it's just maintained success is that I can't imagine a scenario where they just drop off the face of the earth, where they just go, less than 500 and aren't going deep in that region. Like, I just can't imagine that. And the same as we say about, you know, Stanton basketball in most senses, but also like Riverheads football and the other sports that are dominant in this area. You know, like that's what Buffalo Gap girls basketball has become. So it's just, you know, they'll re-rack and try to go next year. And, you know, sometimes for Hogan Heroes now, but you know, then they'll get back to work and you know, they'll be ready next year, just like they were this year. I can't reiterate how impressed I was that we, because other people were saying it too, we're expecting big things from them this year. And then they lived up, you know, and yeah, they didn't get that ultimate goal, but still even making it to the state playoffs under that kind of pressure. Good for them. So good run.
Well, and that kind of takes us into our spring sports, looking ahead a little bit.
A touch, yeah.
we got a few weeks before, well, I guess 1 week before they start playing. It's still scrimmages right now, but the district play won't start until April. But you know, looking ahead, this is, speaking of Buffalo Gap, it's a softball team that wants to get back to a state tournament. They lost in a state semifinal, but you know, we touch on it all the time. 1B is a region where anyone can go in with relative optimism. So it's, you wouldn't rule out Buffalo Gap to find a way to carve a path back through that region and get into a state tournament,
especially with what they do in the regular season. I mean, they're competitive against all the schools in softball, similarly as they are in basketball. So like, I kind of put that as equivalent, and it's just going to make them that much stronger for this postseason in the 1B. I agree with that. I think where we really see the difference is with Riverheads coming out of class two, you know, the Riverheads boys and girls soccer going to like state playoffs year after year. I just don't see that happening in 2B. It's a lot tougher of a run there. You know, some of those teams like Stuart Straft, who's been in 2B, now Fort Defiance down in 2B, and some of the non-district teams, those Riverhead soccer teams have played and lost to these last few years. Now they're in their region. So I just think it's tough to just assume Riverheads will maintain those kind of state runs where, you know, they're kind of waking up in a state, in a region final. Like the girls, I think, you know, they were in the region final automatically because there was only two teams. So I think that's a little, the expectations probably need to be a little realized there. But with going back to Buffalo Gap softball, they're very competitive in softball. And so is Riverhead softball by that means. And they didn't go deep last year. So I would look for those teams still to be competitive. Buffalo Gap in class one, Riverheads in class two. The tennis, they already do like a 1B, 2B, or a class one, class two combo thing. So I think the boys tennis that was on a really great run last year should have optimism this year, as well as Wilson tennis. I mean, Wilson tennis, yeah, is who Riverheads has kind of developed that rivalry. There's always a rivalry between those two schools. But what they did in tennis last year was a really good rivalry. And Riverheads never really got over that hump. So I think that's something they're still going to be trying to do this year. So a lot of opportunity for success there. But then baseball. I mean, baseball, you know, I think we've had a period where, like, there's a lot of good teams. So I think just very early in the non-district season, that's what we'll look at. Look at Fort, look at Draft, look at Riverheads. You know, the common people that are pretty, you know, better in baseball, and see what they're doing in the non-district and to see what kind of hopes we have coming for postseason. All those teams I just mentioned there, other than Wilson, and Wilson's in class three, but Fort, Draft, and Riverhead, all class two. So it's going to be, I think that district region tournament is going to be very interesting, especially with these local teams. And I think we're due for a little bit of an upswing in our local baseball. And we're not that far removed from being quite an upswing. 2020 is that magic year that I think we were going to have three in the state playoffs, one at each level. And we were robbed of that because of COVID. I think we're due for that to kind of get back in that position. Maybe not this year, but I think we're going to work our way back towards that at some point. And so I'm hoping to see signs of that this year.
Well, we'll take a deeper dive and look at the spring sports as they get unrolling in the next few weeks. And as Leland said, you know, we'll have a better idea of what to expect in terms of region and states, which is definitely a ways away. That won't happen until the end of April, May. So we'll be talking about that when that comes around. But once we get the regular season started, that's when we know if our optimistic outlook on some of these teams is justified, yeah, or if we have some other teams that we left out.
I'm always there with the optimism.
Yeah, you tend to have more teams in the optimistic crowd than I do. So,
hey, 2020 was for real. Like, 2020 was not crazy. Now, if I said that this year, I think that would be crazy. But 2020, like, all those teams were coming off deep runs and bringing back a lot of talent. So I really, on what could have been of 2020, you can talk about other sports, you know, the winter season that was ending that did got cut off short, the spring season that got wiped out. I think baseball was the biggest what could have been. So I'm still 4 years later and I'm still whining about it, right?
You sure are. So let's talk college. Let's start with Mary Baldwin. They're out of the D3 tournament, but you know, a solid season for the Fighting Squirrels, and you know, they had a nice showing to get into the NCAA tournament, the D3 level. And unfortunately for them, it came to an end against Case Western Reserve.
Yeah. And I mean, when you say the longest run in school history, it's a short history. So what are you really saying? But still, there's a lot of teams in D3 that don't make it there in their history kind of thing, or it's been 40 years and stuff like that. So for this program to build that quickly, I think really says a lot for the administration, putting the right people in the right spots there. They've had a couple different coaches, I believe. And so I what built to there to be a varsity sport, I think they had to go through the club level first. You know, they've done a great job there at really putting things together. So hopefully they're able to build off of it. And I'd be eager, like now that they've had that success, I'm kind of hoping maybe some more local talent maybe looks to there, or at least like some regional talent looks to there, and we might get some more familiar names that we hear about in high school maybe playing at Mary Baldwin. I think I'm hoping this might have opened the door for people to be going there, because I think a lot of our local people are really used to hearing Bridgewater and Roanoke and a lot of the ODAC teams. So I'm interested to see if this kind of increases some local involvement there, as we've seen in other sports. We've seen a lot of the soccer and I know softball there at Mary Baldwin get some local athletes. It'd be fun to see some in the men's basketball, but you know, it's awesome nonetheless. Even if there isn't any Stanton kids on there, it's awesome that they made it that far.
For Virginia Tech, the season's almost over. They did beat Wake Forest on Saturday, which is good.
You got to enjoy the highs. This is where we're at. Just enjoy the highs. Forget about the lows.
Yeah, they go to Louisville, which, I mean, hopefully is a win because that team is bad. And then Notre Dame. And then, you know, they're in the ACC tournament. They'll probably be one and done. But
they're winnable games, those two. But, like, maybe so with Syracuse. So I don't, you know, you just don't know what you're going to get with these guys each and every night. It just depends kind of. It's like if Padula's on and if Padula's hot, maybe not even just shooting, but just really helping the game big time, mm-hmm. we're good. But if he's not, we're not going to win. So.
For UVA, it's a team that is unfortunately falling apart at the wrong time. They started off rough. They got hot, thought they had righted the ship a little bit, and now they're struggling again. They did beat Boston College, which is good news, but they got thumped by Duke in a bad way, and now it seems like this is a team that is absolutely sputtering, especially on the offensive side, but sputtering at the wrong time, because it's an ACC that is getting more love now than they were from, you know, bracketology and all that stuff, but, I mean, they're still only projecting 5 ACC teams, and UVA is right now in danger of playing their way out of the NCAA tournament, depending on how they do in the conference tournament.
Yeah, they only got Georgia Tech left, but I do think that ACC tournament is going to mean a lot for them. And, you know, they're not in a situation where they got to go win the thing, but I think they're going to have to win a game or two to feel confident of moving out of there. So, yeah, they're coming in probably as a top 4 seed. You know, I think they can technically finish anywhere from 3 to 7, but I think with a win with Georgia Tech, they'll assure themselves a top 4 seed. You'd think that would get them in the tournament, but I, as a Virginia Tech fan, I'll warn you, no, it doesn't. It doesn't guarantee you anything. And, yeah, their offense is just absolutely struggling. It was highlighted with our win a couple weeks ago, but we've seen other teams be able to have the same success with them in the first half. Now, their defense still plays great. And, yeah, they'll only have 9 points, you know, at the under eight timeout in the first half. But the other team only has 20. You know, like, they're doing okay. They're keeping other teams in, like, a under 50 projection. But the problem is they're not scoring 50. So it's tough to watch, I know. But even when they're winning, sometimes it's tough to watch. So I, you know, hearing the UVA fans holler about it, I guess having a basketball team that hasn't won a national championship, I just kind of roll my eyes and I'm saying, enjoy what you had, but you know, also that increases your expectations and that's tough, but you know, anybody that's talking about anything beyond Bennett shouldn't be able to speak. I think you should get your voting rights taken away from you for, you know, elections, maybe look into your driving restrictions. And so, I mean, owning homes, I don't think is right for you. So, like, I mean, just you're just really struggling to cope with life if you think Tony Bennett shouldn't be the coach at UVA. So they're going to head to this tournament as a top four seed. Like I said, they'll get that double bye. I really think they'll beat Georgia Tech. So that's why I say that. Virginia Tech's looking at, I think they're going to end up in like the 10 spots. They're going to end up somewhere in that region, as high as 8, as low as 11. But I think 10 is just kind of that magic number there. I think they have to get 8. I think they have to win both these games. I don't think that'll happen. So I just don't think they'll do that. I think they can split them and still get 10. I think honestly they can lose them both and still get 10. And that's the ACC tournament. That's not going to be played for another week. They still got the last week of the regular season. That'll be in DC next week. So be looking ahead to that. We'll talk more about that next week. But, you know, all these other conference tournaments that we care about are going to get going. That includes the JMU men. They keep on winning. They've won 10 straight. They're the 2 seed in the Sun Belt. And they're going to be waiting on the Georgia State Marshall winner. And they'll take them on Saturday night. So they got kind of the week off to watch that tournament unfold and see who they get.
Yeah, and for them, you know, winning 10 straight's great. They've got some players that made all conference selections, whether it's first, second, third. I think they had one on each. And
they're the player of the year.
Yeah, this is a team that I do think still has a shot to win the conference tournament. App State does seem like a task, and they could probably use the benefit of somebody else beating them for them. But that's what's maybe going to keep them out of the NCAA tournament. I don't think there's an at-large bid for them here. So I think it's win the Sun Belt or you're out in terms of the NCAA. There might be an NIT bid there if you don't. But either way, it's been a solid season for them. They just got to try to find a way somehow in this Sun Belt tournament to beat the boogeyman that is App State. And that being said, you know, you lost the first two regular season games, but if you win in the conference championship against them, you win the one that matters. So,
right.
You know,
and I thought the home game they should have won. I mean, they were right in the middle of that.
Yeah. One. Even the road game, they weren't, you know, it's not like they got embarrassed. Yeah. They were there. It just toward the down the stretch, they really faded a little bit. But I mean, it was competitive for the large part of that game.
As a JMU fan, I'd be at least satisfied to a degree that there's enough respect out there, like at the bottom of Joe Lunardi's bracketology, JMU is getting mentioned as like a consideration for an at-large. They're not going to get an at-large, but for him to at least put their name up there as a consideration is showing respect to what the Sun Belt's doing, what JMU has done, and how dominant. I mean, 15-3 in that is great. It just App State's just, you know, beat you and
the
is
third,
a little bit better.
The third conference loss is a killer. That any outside hope, I think if they beat Southern Miss, they still probably wouldn't get an at-large, but I think any hope of that died when they lost that Southern Miss game.
But at least you're getting mentioned, and it's just still on the way outside. It is the problem, but at least you're getting mentioned.
Virginia Tech women, we talked about it. Notre Dame's a tough team. They lost that one, and then we said UVA's a rivalry game. Who knows? Now, Liz Kitley getting hurt definitely didn't help. But it's a UVA team that was, you know, in a rivalry game at home, and they wanted to win that game, and they did. And so it's a big loss for Tech. Yeah, it's a big loss for Tech. They still have everything in front of them, though. But they've definitely, if Kitley's going to be out and miss significant time, they're going to have to find a way to survive without her. And that's a huge, huge loss. I mean, that's a player that is, you know, it's a major injury. It's not like, you know, okay, our second or third scorer's out. It is a big piece of what they do is missing. Not only is she a scorer, absolutely, she rebounds, she plays defense, absolutely, she does everything. And so you have to find someone who can do all that stuff, and it's hard to do that off the bench.
Yeah, and you might want to, you know, fill in the aggregate. You might want to money ball this and see how you can piece it together to get those rebounds, the court movement to work right, and the score. I mean, it's going to take more than just one person filling in.
Yep.
I mean, coming out of that game, and I know UVA fans might hear me say this, but like the biggest story of that isn't the loss. It's the loss of Kitley and where she's going, what she's doing. Virginia Tech, the number one seed in the ACC tournament either way. So for the ACC, for the immediate right in front of them, it really made no difference win or lose. Virginia Tech wanted to win that game. Credit to UVA. They were in the game before Kitley got hurt. Uh-huh. But then with her out, you know, still found a way to win. So good for them. I'll give them credit. I'm also not going to sit here and whine you know, that we lost. Like, we lost our best player. I'm going to whine about that. It's no one's fault. I've watched that as soon as I saw the replay the second time, you know, watch the replay. It was basketball. You know, nothing bad happened. So anybody on Twitter saying opposite, they don't know what they're talking about. It's just she came down. It didn't even look terrible. It was just something awkward happened in there. And just I don't like every moment that's happened since then. I didn't like her reaction. I didn't like Coach Kenny Brooks coming and the way he was addressing her. I didn't like the little limp off the court. I was hopeful when she came back without anything on her legs that, okay, maybe we've avoided something here. But with no news today, it just continues that I don't like anything. So yeah. We'll wait to hear more about that. With the loss, you know, if they win the ACC, at best, they're a two seed. There's no one seed hope anymore. I think they're going to be a three seed probably kind of either way, as long as they're – I don't know. If they just won and done in the ACC, I don't know what'll happen. But they're only going to drop it so far. They'll still host some tournament games. Liz Kitley being in or out is going to be huge. I know in the men's tournament, the way they seed things, if you lose your best player at the end of the season, it addresses your seeding. So I'm not sure if they're holding on to information like that. But with the ACC tournament still ahead of them, at some point it's going to be – the news is out there. They can't wait until after – you know, seeding for that to get decided. So I think what really got lost there, obviously Kitley with the injury, but also some of that positioning to make things easier in the ACC tournament. Now, if she's back, I think they're a lot more capable of overcoming some of the, you know, harder run to a Final Four that they'll face now, being like a three seed, maybe a two seed. But the way they were playing there through a stretch of the season, I think they can beat just about anybody in the country. I'm ready to take on anybody and see what comes out. I remain the most concerned about South Carolina, but there's going to be other teams I'm going to be more concerned about before then. But it all depends on Liz Kitley. So, I did a big circle to come back to exactly where you started, Joe. Liz Kitley playing again this season or not is the biggest thing for Virginia Tech right now. You could see it in Coach Kenny Brooks in his post game and his press conference today on Monday. So we're all just waiting to see.
Yep, I tend to agree. JMU women. They're going to be the three seed in the Sun Belt. They're going to have their work cut out for them. I don't know. Maybe a chance to win the Sun Belt. Maybe not. The collapsing toward the end of the – not toward the end, but in the middle there of the conference play really hurt.
Inconsistency, I think, is – I mean, it's just like
– that. I think that's a very good word.
Losses for no good reason.
Yeah, that's a very good word, inconsistency. And so – maybe they get hot at the right time and find a way to win the Sun Belt tournament. I don't know if I would expect that. But unlike the men's team, I don't know. The WNIT bids are kind of weird sometimes, so I don't want to go too deep in the weeds there. It's a full tournament in the WNIT, unlike the men's NIT, which is actually shrank. But I don't know if that's a realistic goal for JMU or not. But I do think that this is going to be a season that they look back on and is maybe one they feel got away from them.
I liked the ODU win this week. I mean, to take a top four team out of the Sun Belt to go into their house and beat them by 12. I like that to wrap things up. I thought that was kind of a, okay, let's go into this on the right step. And they've done that. So it's, you know, prove it time. They're the three seed. They're going to wait on Southern Miss, likely Southern Miss there. On Friday, and then they'll go from there. So it's just step up or prove it time. I mean, that's where we're at. They got to win the tournament to get in. So,
yeah, I tend to agree. VCU had a great week. They beat Rhode Island. Then on Saturday, it was the supporter game, which I've been talking about the past few weeks on this podcast and social media. I've been asking people to buy tickets and go support, and they did. Over 6,000 people showed up to the game. It was a women's basketball record in attendance. It was not the only record that was set that day. It was a crazy game. So the game starts, VCU goes on a 12-1 run, and you're like, bam, this is ideal. And then, unfortunately, a girl for George Mason gets hurt, and that really took the air out of the room. I mean, you could have heard a pin drop in there. It sucked. I felt so bad for her. She was conscious. She was talking when they took her out on the stretcher. I haven't heard anything since then.
That's what I was wondering, if you had heard anything.
I haven't heard anything since then other than she was responsive when they took her out and, you know, able to communicate and everything. And that's good. But, it, you know, after that, George Mason goes on a run. They get back in the ball game. They end up with a double-digit lead at one point. And now I'm looking over at my partner in breaks going, oh, gosh, this is the worst thing that can happen with 6,000 people in the room, and you want to build this fan base. You can't have a game like this. And then, to their credit, they've done it before this year. They did it the home game before against St. Joe's. They went into the locker room down double digits, came back, and ended up winning the game. It was more the same this game. They came back. They went on a massive, massive, I think it was an 11 or 13-0 run to get the lead back. And then George Mason and VCU kind of traded punches a little bit there down the stretch. Really tight game. And in the end, VCU ends up doing enough to win the game with some great shots. Tibiasu hit a big three. Tamaya Lewis-Utsi hitting some big shots. Steals at the right moment. And George Mason just getting ice cold toward the end of the game, which was, you know, a big difference. And so they find a way to overcome a loss earlier in the year that they had to George Mason. They get them at home. They get the win. That win then means that VCU has set a regular season win total record at 26 wins, beating the old record at 25. And they win 15. They go 15-3 in conference play, which is a new conference win percentage record for the women's program as well. So this is a history defining kind of team that VCU has. They're going to go into the A-10 tournament. They've beaten everybody but Richmond. And it does appear that the A-10 championship is going to go through Richmond, not only in geography terms, but in realistic team terms. Richmond Spiders and VCU Rams, both in the city of Richmond. Well, technically, Richmond, believe it or not, is in Henrico, but basically the same there. Difference. Richmond area. it'll go through the Richmond area, and they'll play, and I do expect those to be the two teams that play in the conference championship. But that being said, if you've watched the games on ESPN+, you've probably heard Jacinda and I talk about this, and I do firmly believe this. It's kind of a wide-open race between four or five teams. I think maybe Duquesne. You could throw Duquesne in there. I don't love their chances of cutting down the next in Henrico, but they're a competitive team, and they can give anybody trouble on any given day. St. Joe's, George Mason, VCU, and Richmond, all four of those teams at different points in the season have looked like A-10 favorites. George Mason was a team that was in the next four out in women's bracketology going into this week, and I think the VCU loss might change things there, but this is a VCU team that's been solid. I mean, I mentioned, you know, they set a regular season win mark. They're 26-4. They're actually hurt by JMU women not kind of holding up their end of the bargain of the preseason hype of dominating the Sun Belt. I think if JMU's women had done that, VCU's in that at-large bid conversation. But instead, they're probably going to have to win the A-10 to get into the NCAA tournament. But that tournament's going to be starting this week on March the 6th. On ESPN+, VCU has a double bye, so they will play not day one, not day two. They will play day three of that tournament on Friday against the winner of St. Louis and George Washington. Those teams have one day off. And of course, the A-10 tournament changes because of what happened with Davidson, if you're not following along. That the A-10 does have 15 teams in it, and the original plan was for 15 teams to participate in the conference tournament, but Davidson, due to injuries, just doesn't have enough players to field a team. The injuries piled up for them, so they had to cancel the rest of their year. So they will not be in the conference tournament. So they went back to the old format before Loyola Chicago joined a 14-team bracket. And that means that St. Louis and George Washington both will get a day off and then play each other on day two of that tournament. But it's going to be an exciting tournament. I know I'm trying to get down there this weekend. If they're able to win that game on Friday against St. Louis or George Washington, I'm trying to get down there to watch them play Saturday and hopefully Sunday, and hopefully watch them beat Richmond for the first time and get a big win, because that would be awesome.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, so I listened to your game. I turned it on when it was 12-1, and the camera is in the corner of the stadium not changing for a minute. And
yeah.
I was like, wait, what's going on? And that was the injury that you're talking about. So I rewound, and at least I think I rewound it to like when VCU had eight and then watched it from there. And then honestly sat there and listened to you guys talk other than the commercials during the lengthy delay there. So I watched the whole time. Joe, for our listeners, it was Joe's 40th call at VCU, And it sounded like that. He does a great job on the call. I always appreciate listening to him. It had been a little bit since I listened to a whole game of you, to be honest. So you do a great call. Down the stretch of the game, you're at your best with the big shots. And I know it's ESPN Plus, and there's a degree of recalling this game. I appreciate it. Whoever's watching from VCU side, loved your call, because you definitely had the right positive emotion for when VCU made it. Still dramatic when George Mason made some big plays and calling it correctly, but you bring emotion to the call like you do on our local stuff. So I appreciate it listening to you. I had it. The iPad was over there, but I had the audio way up. I was cleaning the garage out. So great call.
I was
going to
say
that.
It was. And it's easy. You know, the George Mason fans might not like the end of that call, but I mean, to be fair, they scored a big 3-pointer. I felt like I called that one very fairly for them. I was very excited when that went in, because I made a 2-point game with like under a minute to go. It's a 2-point game and it's exciting. Okay. Now VCU goes down the floor, hits a big three, and you're like, oh,
yeah,
okay, buckle up. And unfortunately for George Mason, I thought in a 3-point game, they took a shot with maybe too much time on the clock. I don't know if that's the shot that Coach Blair Lewis had drawn up out of the timeout. It was a shot where it seemed like she was trying to draw a foul. There wasn't contact on the shot, and so she's kind of in an awkward position. It misses. VCU gets the rebound. They call timeout to move the ball up the floor, and then I think it's 2.9 is on the clock when they inbound it up three, and we're saying, okay, if they don't steal this inbound right away, you got a foul. They don't steal it, and 2 seconds come off the clock before somebody fouls somebody for VCU, and that was killer. I mean, at that point, it's 0.9, and it's one free throw, and you go home. But again, I just want to say, with the 6,000 people there, that was an awesome environment. That's the first time for a women's game it's been like that. Obviously, it's a record-breaking crowd. And that was
the
awesome.
Last time you called a game, a basketball game? I mean, that was it back to Stanton State Championship? Like, had that kind of atmosphere?
I would say a men's game. Like, I filled in for a couple men's games there, and it had that atmosphere, though. I mean, it was a full pep band. Okay. It was a full pep band. The dance team is there. The cheerleaders are there. The crowd's packing the arena. They've got all kinds of stuff going on in between timeouts, which the folks at home don't see. But
Does the guys still pull off all the shirts? Do they still do that?
The pep band director? You know what? I don't know if he did that. I was not paying attention over there as much. But yes, during men's games, he definitely does.
Yeah, when I came in college to a game a long time ago, back in the day, that was the big thing. The guy, and I don't know if he was the pep band director then. I think he was just a person that they assigned to this. But, you know, bigger guy, probably my size, and he has like 15-20 shirts on. And
yeah,
he's
it's a
just like
guy
going
now,
out there getting crazy and takes one off and throws it and then keeps doing it. It was awesome.
For the men's games, he starts off in a suit, and then he's got about he's got about, I don't know,
about
it feels like five, it feels like 7 to 5 different VCU t-shirts on underneath. The jacket comes off first, then the dress shirt, and then different t-shirts get ripped off at different points. No, they do a great job, and it was a great raucous environment. I do feel like they had an impact down the stretch. I mean, when VCU started to come back, George Mason started to seize up a little bit, and the arena got louder. It was the loudest I've heard that arena at a women's game, and that was a great environment. I'm glad that they got that support. I'm glad that was such a great basketball game for those people to be in attendance for, and it was a VCU win. I'm hoping that can become the new normal. Something the coach and I talked about pregame, and you know, I mentioned to her, I was like, I would love for this to become the new normal here and build that. And she even said, you know, we have to uphold our end of that bargain and keep being this kind of team and build this and give them a reason to come in and support. But this is a team that absolutely deserved that kind of attendance. Yeah. I'm hoping that this is just the start. They're definitely going to lose some players, but I'll talk more about that when the season's actually over. Right now, they're still playing, and they've got a lot to play for. They could get into the NCAA tournament.
So looking at this week, there's a lot of tournament action getting going. I'm going to come back to the point you just made there, but it's Wednesday. If you're looking for daytime basketball, Wednesday, you're going to kind of start getting that. You're going to get a little bit of ACC. You're going to get some Sun Belt all day on Wednesday on the women's side. You're going to get the A-10 getting going on Wednesday on the women's side. So if you're looking for daytime March basketball, like we're all looking forward to in the tournament, the big tournament starts, You can get some good previews of that starting Wednesday this week. I know I'll be interested in all that. But moving ahead to D Block, and I want to come back to what you just said and just take off right from there. Between the support her game that you guys just had and, you know, Caitlin Clark and what she's been able to do, and she's, you know, breaking, you know, surpassing another mark and scoring. And she was the big game on Sunday afternoon. And I guess that was Saturday this week that she played. God, which day was it? Saturdays. I watched a lot of basketball this weekend, but
I think it was
the Iowa Ohio State game.
It was Sunday. Because I
was Sunday. Excuse me. I can't remember which day it was.
Yeah.
And then we roll into the Tech women that night, and that was a big game, and they set an attendance record there, and the most attended women's basketball game. I think women's sporting event in the state of Virginia. I think that was that mark. So you know, that's awesome, and I really appreciated what Kenny. You know, we're always quick to praise Kenny, but he was getting a lot of play on social media today from outside of Virginia for some of his comments post game. He comes into it and just says, "I'm really focused on Kitley, so I'm not, you know, I haven't really run through my head the other reactions to this game." But they went quickly to the atmosphere there and the women getting all the attention, and he said a lot of great things about, you know, how great the women's game is, kind of in a way saying the point that I always reiterate. I've stolen from somewhere else too, but like you start showing it on TV and people watch it. Like when you hide it and don't put it on there, yeah, no one's watching because it's not there. When you put it on there, people can see how great it is and will drive them to the stadium and go to UVA or go to VCU and experience it in person. And it's awesome. It's a great game. Yeah, you don't have 360 dunks. You don't need that in basketball to have good, fun basketball to watch. And it's a great sport. I honestly think taking the around the rim side that we see be so major factor in the NBA and a solid factor in the men's college basketball, when you take that away, I think you get a truer sense of what basketball is, and you really see how it builds. And I know when my girls are sitting down to watch, my kids, not just my girls, but let's watch this. And like, this is, you know, like, this is an imaginable to what you're doing now, what you're going towards. And it's just a great game to watch. And I can, you know, Kenny referenced Carmelo Anthony talking about how great the sport is. And, you know, when you got top people telling you it's great, if you are still talking trash or say you're just wrong, like you just don't have any leg to stand on. That's not what it is. Whatever issue you have with women's basketball is your issue. And it's unrelated to what reality is. So it's just been fun this season. Kind of coming back out of that, Caitlin Clark's the biggest star in college sports right now. Like, my mom knows who Caitlin Clark is, and she knows she plays for Iowa. I asked her who Caleb Williams is. She has no idea. I think these last couple years, especially in the men's game, you get all the one and dones, and you don't, and that's been a stretch now. Mm-hmm. She's the biggest star since Zion, I would say. And I think possibly a bigger star than what, you know, at this time in college, I think she is getting more attention than what even Zion did because these records were getting broken. Because she was there for, I think, 4 years. I know she still had another year of eligibility, but I think that was COVID related. So she's just done more for college sports this year than I've seen anybody do in at least a period of time. And it's been great, and great for women's basketball, but great for college sports. And so I'm sad that she's leaving. She declared last week she's going to go to the WNBA. I hope it helps support more WNBA hype. I know previous stars like Diana Taurasi and Sabrina and some other ones I don't think has brought that hype, but maybe Caitlin Clark being the biggest star of women's basketball in quite some time can maybe help bridge that gap. So I'm excited that she's having that opportunity. I know people argue if it makes sense for her to go or not, and they talk about how much she's going to get paid or not get paid. She's going to get paid. whatever was paying her in college is going to pay her at WNBA. So if her salary for playing basketball is not much, she's still going to get good money, and she should, because she's a big star, and that's how we treat athletes. So I've really enjoyed watching the top level women's basketball. I've tuning into the South Carolina game, turning into Iowa. Obviously the Virginia Tech women, that's easy for me to like, but it's been a fun ride, and it's March now, and this is the biggest time for it. So I'm really looking forward to these next couple weeks and seeing, you know, all that play out.
Well, and I was listening to your last point, one of your last points there.
I made a lot of points there, yeah.
Yeah, but I was listening to somebody talk about this, and, you know, they were saying that NIL deals aren't necessarily going away. Like, they're just endorsements now, and there will be new endorsements. So, like, with Iowa, Iowa's endorsements are limited to what she can get in terms of NIL deals because, you know, she can't get that shoe deal when she's in college, right? Because Iowa's contracted to a certain company. Now Caitlin Clark can go get a shoe deal from various bidders that will bid for her to make the Caitlin Clark shoe for basketball for women or women's basketball shoe. And that will take off. And then she can go, you know, she's not limited to Coke versus Pepsi based on what Iowa's doing. She can go get a Gatorade or a Powerade or a whateverade deal. And then you get
Caitlin-aid at this point. Megan.
you can get the pro contract on top of that. I do know that the Indiana Fever, who have the number one pick in the WNBA draft, doubled their season tickets already. The price of season tickets doubled. Yeah. At the second she said, I'm going pro, those tickets doubled. And
she's not going to go to some fan base where she's going to get lost in the weeds. She's going to Indiana.
Yeah.
Like, the biggest basketball fans in the world live in Indiana. Like, they're going to prop her up just like Iowa is. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same deal there. So I do think
corn and basketballs, all these people got in both places. She's going to go.
I think she's fine. She'll be fine. But yeah, no, you're right. It's been great. You know, when you're watching Nebraska sell out the football stadium for a volleyball match, when you're watching Caitlin Clark, basically a tour around the country and setting various attendance records in those places, set the scoring record and drawing all this attention and VCU, you know, Caitlin Clark's not there, but VCU setting a women's attendance record. You just mentioned UVA set a women's attendance record.
I do think there's a help. I mean, I think South Carolina being dominant and it not being decades old dominating.
That's the difference, right? Like, when UConn,
all of this is helping everybody.
Yes. When UConn was dominant, it was a problem because nobody else was in the same universe. Like, it felt like UConn was not only getting the best 5 recruits every year, they were getting the best 20 recruits. And everybody else was like, all right, well, I guess we're just going to get killed. And
it felt like it had been going on forever. It felt like an empire that you couldn't break down.
And while South Carolina has back-to-back undefeated regular seasons, they did lose in the tournament last year. And so they're going to come in hungry. They're going to look to win that NCAA tournament this year with Dawn Staley, who's a great coach. And I think that's the other thing, right? Before, it was Pat Summitt and Gino Auriemma. And I'm not saying there weren't other good coaches, but it was hard for them to shine because those two kind of were so much more better than everybody else. And now I feel like the women's game is starting to catch up, whether it's Kenny Brooks or Staley or, you know, all these other coaches. Auriemma is still at UConn. And it's just, there's more great coaches coming up in the women's game, which helps build these programs, creates this parity. And it is a fun tournament to watch. It's now, you know, I used to make the joke with you, the women's bracket challenge was a lot easier than the men's bracket challenge. You just pick chalk. Now there are upsets. Now there are teams that get hot and pull off upsets. And it's not all one seeds in the Final Four every year. And it's not UConn penciled into the championship game. Like,
I know you have your bracket, but is there a women's bracket I can do? And like, I know we're late to it. I'm not going to say we've always done a Yak women's bracket. We haven't, but we've had it before. And I was like, yeah. And like, that was coming from a question that I never get before.
Yeah.
So like, it's bringing people in. The interest is there. It's just driving home. If you show it and it's good, like it is, they'll watch it. And it's not limited to basketball. Softball's been awesome. We're going to get to that. And it's just,
and when we talk about, fun. There's a bubble in sports media rights, that bubble is still got room to grow on the women's side. Like, it's, That's the part of the media rights that is largely untapped and is a real opportunity for some of these, you know, whether it's this streaming combined thing or the other side streaming combined thing. And I know these individual companies technically are still their own individual bids, but that's where those bids are going to come in and drive up the price for those. And that's still there to be done. It's the football and it's the men's basketball and it's the pro media rights that when we talk about there's a bubble here and it's going to burst sooner rather than later. Like, we're talking about college football. I don't know how much more money they can pull out.
We're talking top level over there. Right? Like, yeah.
I don't know how much more money can be drawn out of college football before that bubble bursts.
Right. I'm going to give credit, and a lot of people don't do this. I'm giving credit to ESPN. ESPN has committed to getting women's basketball on Thursday nights and women's basketball on all Saturday. They've started a women's game day on Sunday. Thursday night and Sunday, I know I can watch women's basketball, and I can see the top teams compete most weeks on one of those 2 days or both those days. And I know where to find it. They have the game day there. Like, ESPN has done a good job of committing to it and giving it the due, everything it's due. So I'm going to commend ESPN for that, because they're seeing value in that. So there is value in that. Like, they're not creating the value, but they're, you know, that's the biggest key for sports. And leagues worry about this. People need to know where to find us. People need to, you know, be able to easily find us, expect where to find us. I now know Thursday night, I can watch Inside the NBA with Charles and them, and I don't really care about the game that you might show. And I know there's women's basketball on, and South Carolina's there a lot of nights, and Tennessee, and LSU, and the Hokies. I know I can find them. And then Sunday, that's all day. And you might have CBS with a couple men's games over there, but ESPN's done a good job at kind of keeping things out of the way. I really appreciate that. I think it's better for both sports to have that.
I agree. I guess that was your dominating your life.
Dominating my life. Yeah, I adjusted late.
You did. What's been dominating my life, and it's honestly, I say this in kind of jest, because it's been dominating like 2 hours a day this weekend, and then I don't have any more time to do anything else. It's a game called Helldivers 2. And if you're not familiar with it, it's a PS5 and PC game where it's honestly created an environment that is unusual in gaming. Normally, gaming in large communities tends to get very toxic very quickly, because it's player versus player. And when you're in the lobby, a lot of things are said that can't be said on this podcast and are bad. But this game has created a community that is rallying and supporting each other. The premise of the game is all the nations of the world have united to form Super Earth. And you are now space marines fighting for Super Earth to spread democracy against alien bugs and robots. Okay. Like Terminator robots and alien bugs, and you're going to various planets and different galaxies and fighting them and liberating the planets one at a time. And so
because, we're not diving to the underworld. That's good.
Yes. but it's Helldivers, because you're basically diving into hell when you fight these. It's a war. All the players are on the human side, and you're fighting computer bugs and computer robots. So it's not PvP, player versus player. It's PvE, player versus enemy. And everybody is on the same team. And so you can pair up with four friends or up to four people, including random people. And you just play, and everybody's on the same side, and everybody's trying to help each other. And it's a lot of fun. It's incredibly
fun.
It sounds
fun, actually.
It's created some hilarious reels and videos online that have gone viral that my one friend...
Leroy Jenkins back?
That kind of feel.
We need Leroy Jenkins to come back.
My other buddy who plays with me a lot, him and I have been texting each other a bunch of clips that we see and laughing at some of the hilarious clips that go viral. And it's great. It just creates a better online community, which is very rare in gaming. And I've made the joke, I'm going to go into a hole for the next 5 months. And just ignore. I've got my AP news alert, so if something major happens, I'll see it. But until then, just not get on the news cycle and not go read that and see what's being said.
5 months only gets you to August, so I'd suggest more than that.
That's true. Maybe
December.
Maybe six or seven to get to October, And then, you know, I'll pay attention because there's a thing happening in November that we need to pay attention to.
I'd get beyond November if I were you.
But, like, up until, like, October, I'll go into a hole. And then when I come out of that hole, I'll come out of that hole feeling, you know what? We can do this. There are people that can unite. We can work together. We can get through this. And then I'll see the reality and realize, oh, no, that's a video game. This is real life, and we're all screwed. But
I like that concept. I like the concept that you're getting dropped in. You're not shooting each other. You're trying to knock that out, I guess, trying to minimize the time of doing it. Like, that sounds great.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And, like, you have missions, right? It's not the same thing every time you drop down. There are different missions inside the planets that you're doing, and even those missions have different missions, and there's a little bit of change. There's different levels, so, the bugs get bigger and more dangerous as you go, or the robots get bigger and more numerous as you go. But depending on which side you're fighting on that side of the galaxy or that side of the universe, there are people that are saying, oh, they need to introduce, PvP and, PvP multiplayer, and the developers have said we don't plan on doing that. And the rationale behind it is what I've already touched on. PvP becomes toxic fast, and it also lends itself more to people trying to cheat and hack and all that. Here, it doesn't really benefit you to do that. Like, we're all in it together. If you die, you die. It's okay. You can be reinforced a certain number of times, and it's not a big deal. It's fun. It's fun. Me and him, we'll play, and there are bugs that I see in my nightmares now, because and it's not the big ones necessarily. The big ones, I can at least see them, and I've got weapons that can hurt them. There's a certain bug, I don't even remember what it's called now. I think it's called a stalker, that is just like a little small thing that hops around, which makes it really hard to shoot. It'll, like, move around. It's quick. It hops around. It'll sneak up on you, too, which is a little bastard. And then he shoots out. Like, he opens his mouth, and, like, he's got these weird things that come out of his mouth, like tongue things almost, and just, like, they're poisonous, and they hurt you, and it slows you down, and then you're panicking, and I'll start screaming, and, yeah, who knows what happens. Friendly fire is a thing in that game, which, unfortunately, I have killed my friend a few times, and he's killed me a few times, but it happens. But yeah, it's fun. I love that game. I enjoy playing it like nobody's business. And, so if you have a PS5, Helldivers 2, it's $40, which is $20 cheaper than most games. And it's a lot of fun. So
I just looked it up. So you caught my interest.
Come on, Leland, fight for democracy.
I've never been as good as I need to be at first person shooters. I've never been. So I don't know if you're rooting for me to come and actually
come on.
We used to play Halo in college, and there was the Warthog, it was the Jeep, and there was a gun on the back. And my buddy would get on the back shooting, and I would just drive. And I was good at driving, and I'd drive over top of people. Like, I was good at that. But the shooting, first person shooting, actually shooting. Third person shooter.
Yeah, so you see your character.
So you're up above them.
Yeah, you see your character as you're shooting. But
gotcha.
Yeah, they're introducing vehicles and mechs to the game.
Ooh, there I go. Now
soon.
I'm good.
That's going to be in an update. But yeah, come on in.
I'm always the driver.
Here's the thing. It doesn't add any more bugs if you add more people in your squad. So that's where, like, sometimes it'll just be the two of us, and our missions are a little bit harder than they need to be because there's only two of us. And we're running around like crazy people who aren't excellent at the game ourselves. We're okay, but we're not really great. Every once in a while, like, we forget to set our session as private, and a rando comes in, and we get to see how really bad we are because they come in and they're like, oh, guys, you're supposed to go over here for this optional thing that gives us more credits. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I knew that. Thanks for taking care of it.
Yeah, we knew that. Yeah, we were just messing around,
But it's fun. Yeah, join. If you have a PS5, again, it's Helldivers 2. Join. Fight for democracy. And, there's some hilarious, like, propaganda stuff that goes on in the game, which is hilarious. But it's a ton of fun. I love it.
That's interesting. The college Diamond Sports update is what I'm going to do, is what I know that you need to know. Mm-hmm. We previewed the stuff at the beginning of the season, especially JMU softball, but we haven't been talking about the last couple weeks. Once they get into conference play, we'll jump into it more, I know. So just where we're at, Virginia Tech softball is looking good. They're projected to be, you know, in the top half of the ACC. I think they were fourth in the ACC preseason poll, but they've started out nice at a 15-3 mark and a one. They tied one, I guess, due to darkness or something. I don't know. But they have wins over Auburn and Arizona State and Georgia already. And then they swept Notre Dame in the ACC. So that was a good start to their season. Hopefully they're able to keep it up. It's really fun. I love when Tech's good in softball, like they have the last couple of years, has been great. So hopefully they can continue that kind of mark. JMU softball still getting their legs under them. We heard from Coach LaPorte in our preseason interview. They had some coming together to do, and they had to figure out who they were. They're doing that right now. So things are going to have to come together a little bit better in the Sun Belt for them to have the postseason hopes. But we know Coach LaPorte's building things there. They're 12-7 right now. They're, you know, in the middle, like fifth in the Sun Belt voted preseason. And nothing saying that they can't kind of still kind of get that mark as they move forward. I was leaving it open in case you had something, but for baseball side of things, Tech baseball 8-3. They weren't expected high this year, and they're not looking super good. I know 8-3 doesn't sound bad, but looking at who they played, it's not exactly where they wanted to be. They lost to JMU. JMU's also 8-3, but they beat Arkansas in one of those wins, and they were voted 10th in the Sun Belt. So they might, to a degree, have a little like, hey, that Arkansas win's a good thing. Let's build off of that kind of success. We'll see what they're able to do, but still not a lot of expectations for either one of those baseball teams. The college baseball team, somewhat locally, that is experiencing expectations, UVA baseball, you know, and that's not different than normal. 10-1 to start the year. They've done well against Iowa and Auburn with wins there. They were voted first in the Coastal, voted second, I believe, and overall in the ACC to Wake Forest, and they're living up to that so far. But I think Notre Dame playing Tech and softball is the only conference games we've gotten out of all those teams I just talked about. So a lot of the season's still getting ready to play. Second week of May, we'll get softball conference championship. Towards the end of May, we'll get baseball conference championships, and then rolling into the postseason from there. But I just wanted to give a quick update on the where we're at with some of those diamond sports. UVA baseball and Tech softball kind of seem to be the leaders of the pack so far for big time hopes. But a lot of good building going on at JMU softball, as we'd expect.
VCU baseball's 8-4. They've won four straight games.
Oh, yeah.
Games.
You got to fill in with that. I didn't even put that on here.
Yeah. VCU baseball's won four straight games. They had a pretty big week. They lost to North Carolina, who's number 17 in the country. That was the second ACC team they've played this year. In the opening series, they stole one against NC State, a 9-6 win in the middle game there. But then they played North Carolina this week. They also played Maryland, who is a team that is expected to make some noise in the Big Ten. They went out. They had an inning where 12 runs scored in the inning, 9 runs scored before an out was recorded in that inning for VCU. So
Little League stuff.
Yeah, it was a big seventh inning. They end up winning that game 15-7, which kind of tells you what was going on before that 12-run inning. But it was a big win for VCU. After that, which was Wednesday, then they go into the weekend in the Central Virginia Classic, which, if you're not familiar with that, is William & Mary Richmond and VCU invite three teams down to rotate and play all three teams at their own home venues. So they
great.
Played Sacred Heart.
Let's do some basketball.
Yeah, they played Sacred Heart on Friday, beat them 6-2, played Central Connecticut State, beat them 10-0 in 8 innings. They played a Boston College team that had beat William & Mary in Richmond, so that was kind of the de facto Central Virginia Classic championship. And then VCU went out and beat them 10-1. They had a big 8-run inning in that game, in the fifth inning, where they dispatched of the Boston College Eagles. Tomorrow and Wednesday, they play East Carolina, who's number 11 in the country. So that's the third-ranked opponent they'll play this year.
It's an opportunity, Joe. Opportunity.
Opportunity. It's also difficult. They'll play
UVA. Hey, their
UVA.
Offense is rolling, though. I mean, you got the bats are rolling.
They'll play UVA a couple times this year as well, once in Charlotte.
They got the home and away with
UVA. Richmond.
Yeah.
Yep. So they'll have, what is that, four different ACC opponents. That'll be their fourth ranked opponent as well, I believe. So it's going to be big for them this season as the season unfolds. They were picked to finish 10th in the A-10. But we'll see. I mean, right now, if the hitting keeps doing what it's doing and the pitching can kind of, they've got a few pitchers that have really looked good to start the season. If they can get them and then some others to come online by the time conference play rolls around, it's a team that I think will finish better than their preseason prediction in the A-10. But it's an A-10 that is honestly pretty wide open.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I forgot to throw them on there.
Well, you won't forget next time.
See, baseball is what I've listened to you more. Last year, I'd cut your baseball games on all the time for VCU.
It's easy to do because they play in the day.
To listen to a whole game of basketball, I don't know if I did it even last year. Because last year, the VCU women weren't having their best year, so like I wasn't anxious to. This year, I've just been busy as the reason I haven't done it sooner. So I was really excited turning to that game. But yeah, what always reminds me, and I'll say this publicly, I mean, this is one of those things I would maybe wait till after the show. Like, Stephanie's sitting there listening to the game beside me, and she's like, Joe's awesome. Like, he's a pro on this. Like, we're lucky to have you calling Riverhead's game. So I'm glad VCU has you, but I think you could call any game they put in front of you.
Well, I mean, I enjoy it. And, you know, I did post a post. And if you don't, or if you aren't friends with me on Facebook or follow me on the gram,
I'm just acquaintance with you on social media.
Yeah. I mean, there are other people that are acquaintances that have become Facebook friends too. If you don't follow me, you know, I posted on there and it, you know, it's Richmond's a drive. It's an hour and a half each way. And there are days where the traffic is something I curse and raises my blood pressure. And, you know, maybe on Saturday we went back and forth with a parking attendant on where I should and shouldn't be allowed to park. And I ended up winning that battle. Once the headset goes on, I love it. It's fun. And this women's basketball team this year has been a ton of fun to call. You know, one of the reasons that Stephanie's able to say that, and you mentioned it earlier with the emotion and stuff, it's a lot easier to get, you know, put emotion in that call and get excited when the game's tight and when the game's close. And that St. Joe's game. Yeah. The St. Joe's game had a big comeback in a game that mattered for the A-10 seeding. The George Mason game at the end of the year had a big comeback on both sides where VCU ends up winning the game, and it's an exciting finish, and it had VCU winning the 2 seed in the A-10 because they beat George Mason. So, you know, that's exciting. And VCU baseball, when they're scoring 8 runs an inning, it's really easy to talk about it when they're hitting triples down the line or hitting the ball out of the park and putting up a ton of runs and winning games. You know, I got
to. We just
got to
get you in some night games so we can get another one lost into the night.
Yeah, well, that's coming when conference play. When the clocks make their change again, we'll start doing that again because that's when they start playing at 6. But I actually will have some time off. The next VCU home series against Princeton, I managed to get off for my birthday. But I've got a midweek on March 26th against William & Mary. That'll be the next baseball game I do, and then I'm excited.
Ooh, you got like a couple weeks off. Wow.
I know. Awesome. It's so I can do my taxes. Yeah. But it's a ton of fun. And you know, you mentioned that lost into the night. That's a situation that doesn't happen if I'm not at VCU and they don't give me that situation because of the way the game's going. So I've been very fortunate. I've been very fortunate with my partners at VCU that I've had as analysts. They've been awesome. And I've been very fortunate here in Stanton and Waynesboro and Augusta County. I mean, I've had you as a partner, and you've been easy to work with. We've had great chemistry during our calls. We do this podcast. I joke with you that, you know, we're colleagues and we're partners, not friends. But, you know, we wouldn't be doing this podcast if we didn't get along and we weren't friends. So, because there are days where I don't want to do this podcast, but I'm like, got to do it. It's Leland's my buddy.
In all honesty, and this is you know, behind the curtains for listeners, there's plenty of nights that I got 3 kids running 3 different directions and a wife that's expecting me to handle one of those directions at least. And it's not the best, but like, and I come into it like, I don't want to do this right now, but I don't want to do it tomorrow either. So yeah. Like, I'm going to go do it. And then I come out of it every time like, well, that was good. Like, I feel good about it. You know, like, I don't know. So I
yeah, if we don't talk the college football playoff, like we end on a good note.
Yeah, well, those are the nights that I don't always feel the best at the end. But
yeah, but normally we do, and it's the same way, right? Like I'll come in, and honestly, like after the thing with the parking attendant, I was a little annoyed because I was like, if you would have listened to me 15 minutes ago, I wouldn't be walking in right now. I would have walked in 15 minutes earlier. I'd be able to sit down, set up, relax a little bit, get everything in order. Now I've got to rush around. Now I've got to go run to the coach's office so I can go interview the coach pregame because you were being an idiot telling me I'm not on some list.
Being rushed pregame.
And when I call the guy from the university to come tell you that, yes, he is allowed to park here, you question him, even though they're the people that hired you. Who do you think makes the bleeping list? I don't know. But anyway, we got it sorted out. It's not a big deal. We got it sorted out. And as soon as the headsets went on,
she was aggressively trying to do her job. Come on.
He was aggressively trying to do his job.
He was aggressively trying to do his job.
But, but we got in and get the interview done with the coach. We sit down, we do everything, that we need to do in the final minutes before the game starts. And then, you know, it's just more madness in that game. You know, normally the A-10 commissioner can sit wherever they want. There's plenty of seats, but that game was packed. It was over 6,000 people and there weren't seats available in the stands. So the A-10 commissioner ends up sitting right next to me during the game. And right before we go on air, the SID is like, hey, is it okay if the A-10 commissioner sits next to you? I was like, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. Like, I mean, it's fine.
I'm glad he did. That can only be good for you, man.
She did. Yes.
Great call. See, I'm sorry.
That's twice.
The person.
That's twice.
I don't know who the commissioner of the A-10 is. I'm sorry. I don't.
That's twice. One on each side. You can't call
me. If you come to listen to Joe on his podcast because you thought he had such a great call the other day, you need to know everything he does. I'm the one that messed that up.
Yeah. But, you know, she sits next to me and we make it work. It's a lot of fun. And the headset goes on. We start the call. And from that point on, like, the only uncomfortable moment was that injury, and that's uncomfortable from a human standpoint. Yeah. That's nothing is going on that I can control. So
produced a good moment when everybody like kind of slapped hands at, like, everybody was like,
yeah, I mean,
know,
that was I was not expecting
human
that.
Experience right there.
Yeah, I was not
that.
Expecting
like, man,
that. Both
nobody
teams,
likes that.
Yeah, both teams, they are rivals. They have played the women's rivalry since 1975, and I don't know how long the men's goes back, but they have hated each other for a long time too. And to see that coming out of that timeout, I thought was special. And
George Washington on the front of that boat. I guess it's George Mason. So
George Mason.
I was trying to make a,
yeah, George Mason, George Washington's a different team in the A-10.
Yeah.
But
sailing across the Potomac,
the Delaware,
and that VCU.
The Delaware. Learn your history.
I guess that was the Delaware. My bad. I'm way off of my reference here.
Yeah, Leland's all over the place. But getting back to the point, it's been a lot of fun, and I've enjoyed it. I hope I get to keep on doing it, and I'd love to see what, you know, the future holds, and whether it's at VCU or wherever. I just enjoy doing this. Every time I put on a headset, I have a ton of fun, and whether that's in Richmond or here locally, I have a great time doing it.
I'm glad you do it, man. All right, let's get out of here. Let's tell you guys to follow us at Yak Sports Pod on social media. That's primarily Twitter and Facebook. And then subscribe to us on Podbean, Apple. For the next 3 weeks, you can listen to us on Google and also Spotify and wherever else we can get our podcast out. Hopefully you can find us there. And to make sure you're telling your friends, hey, it's spring season's getting going here. You might have some people entering some new sports and don't know that we're talking about their kids in spring sports around Augusta County. Make sure that they know what we're doing out here, because we might be talking about, you know, their home run or their great serve at some point this season. So make sure you're telling your friends what we're doing here. And we got some guests lined up. I know we had a little stretch there with a lack of guests, but we got guests these last few weeks and we got some ahead of us. And some potential for some big names. So make sure you're tuning in and subscribe to us so you don't miss any of that. And make sure you come back next week as we'll be back to talk about the sports that matter to you, the Augusta County sports fan, here on the Yak Sports Podcast.
You've been listening to Yak Sports, your Augusta County sports podcast.